A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah.
It's never, never, never been a good bet to bet against America.
A stronger NHS, better schools, safer streets, control from our borders, protecting and building an economy that embraces the opportunities of Brexit.
Hi, hello and welcome. This is an episode of Mid-Atlantic, the podcast where we look at the news and the views from both sides of the Atlantic. I'm your host, Royfield Brown, who is sat in Birmingham. Now, joining me today, we have a panel of keen observers from across the globe. We have Kate Smirthwaite in London. You're in London, aren't you, Kate?
I'm here right now.
We are so honoured to have you bless our podcast. Why don't you just tell everybody what you do?
Yeah, so I'm a sort of left-wing political comedian, activist, campaigner. I write a show each year and I take it around the festivals from Edinburgh to Adelaide to Perth and that sort of thing.
The next person I'm going to introduce, Mike Donohue over in Los Angeles, is all about bringing the heat and the contention.
Yeah, otherwise, what's the point? I'm right. You're wrong.
Tanya Alltrade is also from London. How are you today, Tanya?
Well, thank you.
And we are joined by Z Cohen Sanchez, who's running a little bit late, but will be joining us, so do not worry if you want to hear her dulcet tones. Now, today we delve into the intricate layers of one of the most unprecedented legal and political dramas in American history. It's the criminal trial of the former President Donald Trump, who faces charges over hush money payments made to adult film actress Stormy Daniels and its implications not just on American politics, but on the global stage. This case, which began with jury service this Monday, marks a historical first as no former US president has ever stood criminal trial. It is a moment laced with significance and potential repercussions, not only for Trump, who is once again eyeing the Oval Office, but also for the American populace. After that, look at the never-ending career of one Liz Truss and her latest endeavor, the book 10 Years to Save the West.
This is an assault on America. Nothing like this has ever happened before. There's never been anything like it. Every legal scholar said this case is nonsense. It should never have been brought. It doesn't deserve anything like this. There is no case. And they've said it. People that don't necessarily follow or like Donald Trump said this is an outrage that this case was brought. This is political persecution. This is a persecution like never before. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. And again, it's a case that should have never been brought. It's an assault, and that's why I'm very proud to be here. This is an assault on our country. And it's a country that's failing. It's a country that's run by an incompetent man who's very much involved in this case. This is really an attack on a political opponent. That's all it is. So I'm very honored to be here. Thank you very much.
Z, question to you. We've seen Trump on trial. Not anything civil. This is a real trial with real repercussions. This is the first time a former US president has stood trial. This is a significant moment in American legal and political history. Thoughts and feelings, first off, seeing your former head of state snoozing whilst in court?
It's embarrassing, to say the least. But I think that Trump is going to have a lot of issues regardless, because it seems like right now there seems that there will be an advance of the January 6th lawsuits. We've got the Stormy Daniels. We've got the criminal charges for the 2020 election case. We have so many things happening right now. But to be perfectly honest, I don't think that this is going to hurt him in the election. I really don't.
Why not? Why is it when about a third of people who said they would vote for Trump said that if he's convicted, they wouldn't? Why are they wrong?
One of the biggest issues is that Trump is taking these conspiracy theorists, right? Or he's created conspiracy theorists. Who knows the chicken before the egg question? But either way, a big portion of his supporters are conspiracy theorists. So because of that, it doesn't matter what Trump does. It doesn't matter which direction these lawsuits go. I actually think that if the more that he gets convicted, the more it'll actually help him, because they think of this as like a witch hunt now, and they want to support the witch that's being hunted. So I really don't think it's going to make all that much of a difference. As I said, I don't think he's going to lose any votes from this.
Mike, Z makes a point, doesn't she, that many Americans see this as a political stitch-up. Yes, Trump is accused of falsifying business records to conceal payments made to influence the 2016 presidential election. But this is because the political legal apparatus is biased against him. And this is all pushed by the Biden administration.
So you want me to respond to that?
I'm trying to play devil's advocate.
Maybe weep about it, maybe. Just acknowledge that as a fact and just cathartically let it all out, Mike.
Whether you want to call them a cult, whether or not you want to call them flat earthers or landing on the moon denialists, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. They're in their bubble. And the big issue, I think, is that they're supported in their bubble not only by a significant portion of GOP politicians who should know better, including senators who are supposed to have a little bit more gravitas, but also the Fox media machine, which cannot be underestimated on its impact on the American zeitgeist. Yeah. Is it sad? Is it a reality? Yes. Yes. Is it going to matter? No, not to 90% of registered Republicans. This is the election, right? So he's not going to be running again. And if he loses, he won't run again in 2028. He'll be like 82 or something, some insane doddering year. Biden cough. But yeah, no, this is his last chance. And I think all the stops are going to be pulled out. Since I'm prognosticating today, I think it's only a 50-50 chance that anything legal comes down prior to the election. Anything, including the most active one, which is the fraud case.
See, I think Mike has painted a convincing case as to the reason why Trump appears to be somewhat bulletproof. He has a whole media edifice, or at least, if not behind him, or at least aiding his level of misinformation and disinformation towards his supporters, Fox News, One America, etc., etc. We understand that. Is Trump truly a unique phenomenon, though? Is there another politician that could be in this much legal jeopardy as Trump and somehow be able to float above the American political fray?
I think it could have been anyone, to be honest. I don't think that there was anything particularly special about Trump for him to be the chosen one. But I think that the way that we have been going politically since Reagan, to be honest, but we've set up a breeding ground right now for the type of folk that do support Trump. And yeah, I don't think it matters that it was Trump or it could have been anyone else. I think that at the time, people were looking for a certain type of rhetoric to be able to attach themselves to. And Trump provided that. Also, Bernie provided that with the way that he spoke with his populist speech tactics. So I really don't think, honestly, I think if it was Bernie and Trump, I think that Bernie would have taken a lot of those votes just because I think people were looking for that type of rhetoric already. But the fact that it became Biden and Trump, obviously more people swayed towards Trump and the way he was able to address them.
I don't know if I agree with you. Right? I think in all the times that you've been on the show, I think this is the time when I disagree with you the most. In terms of, I think Trump brings something very unique to the American political space. Just the very fact that he wasn't seen as a politician, he was an entertainment star. And also the fact that, somewhat of a businessman as well, but The Apprentice, I think, is incredibly important. But then also the fact that average Americans who lean right, and some of them that don't even lean right, see themselves in Trump. He connects to blue-collar Americans in a way that many other politicians don't.
I was just going to say that what's interesting, I think, is that the American public and the Republicans and the Trump supporters, right, in a way, they're right. The legal system in the US is not about real justice. And I think a lot of them know that in an absolutely visceral way, but it's them that ends up in trouble with the law, and it's never the organization that has scammed them. Victims of rape and sexual assault, they know they don't stand a chance of getting any justice. We never see the big corporate frauders in court, and we know that it comes down to money. When we do see these big cases, like O.J. Simpson died this week, like the Johnny Depp Amber Heard case, we don't see like that careful justice is followed. We see whoever throws the most money at it and has the most expensive lawyers, which is never the guy on the street. It isn't about carefully finding the truth. It is about power being thrown around and the most expensive lawyer, which just means that whoever loses does appear to be the victim of a power imbalance. And the fact that Trump also is a terrible person who has done loads of things wrong, like, that's not even what the justice system is going to discover. It's going to discover whether he's got enough financial support to stay out of trouble. But, like, the justice system is so messed up that the public are right that they can't believe the outcome of it. And it's a shame because the outcome of it looks like it might also, by coincidence, be the truth. But doesn't matter, does it? Because no one believes it's going to be the truth. So it doesn't influence anyone. If they already liked Trump, they'll decide he's a victim of it. And if they didn't, they'll be like, see?
Tanya.
You're right that the justice system is not perfect and it's deeply flawed. And we can look at some of the reasons why it's deeply flawed. In my view, Trump is one of the big reasons why it is deeply flawed. He has undermined that system in many respects. For his supporters to now say that the justice system is flawed and we think that our man is not going to get justice. Let's look at Trump's history. Let's look at the history on top. Let's look at his history on people with who tried to sue him and what he's done there. So he's one of the big reasons why the system is flawed, and he's right in the center of it. He's one of the cancers that is growing within that system. Mm-hmm. And now he's in a position where he might not be just big enough. There was a time when I thought, actually, it might be that Trump's too big to fail. And that was what propelled him to power in my view. Like when you have a center, when you have a bank, for instance, too big to fail. And then when they fail, you have to put more public money into them. That's what we've done with Trump. We've just invested more public hope into him, more public desire that he actually is right. But when someone fraudulently takes your money, you continue to invest in them, but it's never going to come back. And people are going to see it in that hope.
Mike, what are the kind of political consequences and future implications of Trump getting a conviction? There are going to be many Americans that, as we've said before, who don't believe that these are legitimate charges anyway. Where does that put democracy in the United States, considering that January the 6th, some years ago, Trump, whilst president, could exhort a whole bunch of Americans to go and storm the Capitol? What are the implications?
Can I swear on this podcast? You can edit it.
You know what? I can edit it.
We are proper fucked.
Well, that's fine. That's a good Anglo-Saxon word. That's hardly a swear word in Britain these days.
So I'll give you as an example. One of our governors, Chris Sununu, a high-ranking GOP person, was on TV over the weekend, and he came out and in the interview, he said, yes, I believe Trump did incite the January 6th mob to impede the vote. And yes, I think his election denialism is a serious threat to democracy. And yes, I will be voting for him in November. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what he does, even to the point of undermining our democracy, it doesn't matter to that group. Again, our politics, and this is, I think, again, culturally coming eastward, it's not so much as what you're for as what you're against. And because what you're against makes you angry, and anger motivates and fear motivates. And I think politicians have finally realized that. And it's more about, look, Brexit was a big FU to the EU, right? And to immigrants. I'm not for this. I'm really against that. And I think because that sort of appeals to people's base natures, I think we're only going to see more of it because I think it's successful.
That's the question of leadership, right? And one goes for the right reasons.
Yeah, and runaway disaster capitalism is a fight for power. And so whoever can frighten people the most with whatever and nonsense is always more terrifying. There's some quite terrifying truth out there, climate change and stuff. But instead of which, we're all being terrified by the idea that the European Union might insist on straight bananas or whatever nonsense Boris Johnson made up. So, yeah, sadly, that is the world in which we live these days.
One of the things which seems to, at least to my partisan eye, really characterize the Republicans is so many of them very clearly put party before country. And I think Mike made a wonderful illustration of that with what Mike said about Sununu, that he can actually say that Trump is a threat to democracy in so many different ways, but he's still going to vote for him. Why is it that somebody like me, a Brit from the outside looking at American politics, can walk away with this impression that considering the Republicans are the party of rallying around the flag, still so many of their politicians put party over country when it comes to Donald J. Trump?
I think that in their mind, they don't think that they're doing that, right? And that's a big part of the problem, is that they think that this is what's best for the country. But I'm curious, I want to go back to this, disagree. Do you think that Bernie would have lost the election?
No, I think you misunderstood me. And I was going to come back to it. So I realized I was incredibly rude as a host. I said I disagreed with you and then said the reason why I disagreed with you, then didn't give you the right to reply. No, Donald Trump is a very different phenomena. He isn't a politician. Most people don't see him as a politician. That his long gestation with the American public as a businessman, as somewhat of a playboy in New York, and then The Apprentice, has led to him having the regular rules of politics and legal jeopardy don't apply to him in a way that I think they would for a regular American politician of right or left, to be honest with you. I think Trump, he's like Huey Long back in the 1930s. He's a phenomenon of the times of which people, historians, will look back at this and write about him because he is incredibly unique. I don't think DeSantis, if DeSantis had been the presumed Republican nominee for president in 2024, he would have anywhere near this level of legal jeopardy.
No.
He'd be toast.
He would. I agree with that. No, I agree with that. But DeSantis, I think DeSantis is too specific. I would think, I guess my question to you is, if
I'm going to go anybody.
Anybody, what about, okay, let's just have a hypothetical scenario here. Trump never existed, wasn't born, right? And Matt Gaetz came along and did the same thing. You don't think that it would be the same situation or very similar?
No, I don't think the American public connects with Matt Gaetz in the way that they do with Donald Trump. At least not Matt Gaetz 2024 version.
Yeah, but I'm saying that if Trump never existed, if Matt Gaetz came in, nobody knew who he was. He wasn't a current politician. He was just Matt Gaetz, right? Like, you don't think that there'd be a similar cult following?
I think, again, I'm going to say no, because I think what's key to Trump is how long he's been on in the American entertainment firmament. That he, to some people, he is incredibly successful as a businessman. To some people, he talks truth in a way that your blunt uncle does on Thanksgiving. There's a whole level of unique things which are wrapped up with Donald Trump, but a lot of it is to do with how long he's been on people's TVs. Matt Gaetz could maybe attain it, but not for another 15 years or so. I think the gestation of Trump is a key part.
I think once the witches of Macbeth gather behind someone, I think if Trump didn't exist, they'd go for Garth Brooks or somebody. Just they'd That's find true. Somebody who's got like extreme crazy views, but a populist following, very much like the opening of Macbeth, and be like, you can be the king. If Donald Trump didn't exist, they would build him.
That pot is going to be boiling for a long time because that person is not on the radar. Rayfield is absolutely correct that Trump is a unique combination that strikes one in a generation, and it's not going to be followed up. And I think one of the big parts to his saying is not only was he a viable part of the American consciousness, but he is one of the richest, most powerful people in a position of power who said what the average guy was thinking in a way that the average guy would say. And when Matt Gaetz or MTG or any of the other somethings say that stuff, it's just like it's dismissed. Like, it's okay for you to say that. You're not in any position of power. You're not rich. You're not impactful. You're just trying to make a name for yourself. And Trump already had the name for himself. And I cannot see anybody with his level of narcissism, his level of just crudeness, but also with that political innate skill that he does have. It's not out there right now on the radar. There's nobody, and I'm fairly familiar with what the GOP has to offer. There's nobody out there that has that mix or that potential right now.
We'll have you back on, sir. Anybody that agrees with me will definitely have back on. But on that note, now we need to go to the other side of the Atlantic and talk about what's happening with Liz Truss and her new book.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Liz, welcome, and thank you for joining me on Spectator
TV. Great to be here.
Now, you mentioned the mini-budget. Did you ask yourself, is this politically deliverable?
Yes.
And you thought
I
it
did.
Was?
Yes. Well, I don't think it's true that I uprooted the economic architecture.
You suspended the OBR, you'd sacked the permanent secretary of the Treasury.
The OBR weren't consulted about furlough announcements. They weren't consulted about public spending announcements. And there were no complaints at the time.
Did you know that your chancellor was going to promise even more tax cuts?
No.
What did you think when you heard that?
Well, I don't think it was particularly helpful.
You also speak in the book about the effect on your family that being number 10 had.
I was talking to my daughter this morning. She said nothing about this as normal.
Your own husband here warned you this would end in tears.
Yeah, he did.
You didn't listen?
No.
Opinion has been split in immigration amongst conservatives. In your book, you talk about it as a problem. Have you always believed that the figures were too high?
I agreed with Suella that we needed to reduce them. We've seen the judiciary significantly empowered by Blair's changes to the Constitution. Take the Rwanda policy. It's not deliverable because the courts have stopped it.
So if the courts stop it, it's not deliverable. I mean, you can't wish for a world where the courts don't have these power. So
I can wish for a world where the Supreme Court no longer exists. I can. I believe, like you, Fraser, it was possible to change things within the system. And now I'm convinced that the system itself has to change.
Now we're going to look into the riveted and controversial new release from one of the UK's most ridiculed political figures, Mary Elizabeth Truss. Known simply as Liz Truss, she briefly held the reins as the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom in 2022, marking her tenure as the shortest in British political history. Yet during that time, she still managed to wreck the economy. A graduate of Merton College, Oxford, where she studied, ironically, philosophy, politics, and economics. In her new book, 10 Years to Save the West, Truss offers an unapologetic reflection on a tumultuous political journey, including a rapid ascent to an abrupt departure from the pinnacle of UK politics, despite facing severe criticism and a government crisis that dramatically shortened her time in Downing Street. Truss's book suggests that she is far from finished as she makes the media rounds. What does her book tell us about the state of the Tories and free market neoliberalism in 2024? Kate, as the new girl on the pod, why don't we come to you first? Liz Truss.
First of all, you just got to hand it to her that she's managed to spin a whole book out of what was essentially only about 3 weeks in Parliament. Considering that as soon as she got in, the Queen died and everybody had a massive break, the amount of days that she actually spent doing anything is borderlines on trivial, doesn't it? The first thing that we make of it is that it's really quite an achievement to have even written a book and in a way to have done enough horrendous stuff to fill a book. As if we need to reread what happened. We know what happens. She came, she saw, she made a right mess. And then fortunately, before things got any worse. But I will just make the point that when you say she should be good at this because she did PPE, this is a really interesting thing. Loads and loads of politicians went to Oxford and did this course PPE. I was at Lincoln College, Oxford, only a couple of years before Rishi Sunak was at the same college doing PPE. I didn't do PPE, I did maths, right? Which Rishi Sunak says is the most important subject, so I'm better qualified than he is by his definition. You study philosophy, politics and economics. Sounds pretty smart. At the end of the first year, you can drop one of those three subjects. They all drop the economics because their maths is too weak to do it, and they're left with studying philosophy and politics, where you're largely writing essays based on what people think and theories and this kind of stuff. And it's not nearly as impressive a degree as it sounds, but it's the one that they all do. It's literally known as the Oxford PPE trick. She's one of those, and so's Rishi.
Tanya, I presume you went straight onto Amazon on Monday, first thing, ordered the book, you've been devouring it. Is it a good read?
Look, man, anyone who reads that book will continue to lose brain cells by the minute. She's a walking billboard for the idiocy of the Conservative Party. The longer she's allowed to roam the streets free and just talk about her ideas, the more people are going to understand that there's rabid, senseless people within that party. I couldn't agree with Kate more.
I expect she says that we should get rid of all of them, or that it's not a one-woman problem, or something.
Well, when she said that she's managed to coin out a book out of 44 days in power, even the days where she actually did something was less than, but very trivial. How someone can actually manage that is an amazing feat, and she's managed to do that. But Jesus Christ, there is nothing that woman says that makes any sensible sense and makes any contribution to the progression of our society.
I would not have been trying to pad out the book because she's only got 44 days to write about the second sugar lump gently dropped into the teacup. I swirled it with my metal spoon.
You mock, but she wanted a Mercado delivery. So you mock about the trivia that's in the book, but there is a line about the fact you couldn't get her groceries delivered to her. But
you wouldn't have that problem with Lidl. They'd just leave them at the end of the road. They'd be fine, wouldn't they? That's the trouble. She's gone to a fancy supermarket. They're all like, you were not at home and we've written a special handwritten card. No, you wouldn't get. They just leave it at the end of the street.
Okay, so we ridicule Liz Truss, but she did get to the pinnacle of UK politics, if only just for 49 days. But what she seems to be lauding now is this popular conservatism. She's gone on these speaking tours throughout the US. She's been to CPAC and the Heritage Foundation. And she seems to be positioning herself as a key voice against the Liberal establishment. Kate, please explain to me how you can become the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland and rail against the Liberal establishment if you are a Conservative?
First of all, everybody in politics will tell you that they are fighting back against the establishment. And when you actually look at it, you're like, you might actually be the establishment. I think there's very few people in Parliament who I really feel are standing up. I think a lot of them are playing politics. And of course they're playing politics because we call it a democracy. But in fact, very few people in the UK, and I know we're going to talk about the US as well. I know that there's lots of places around the world where this is the same, where very few people's vote really has any impact at all. And the whole thing turns into a media circus where things get twisted. It turns into a personality competition rather than being about policy.
Though, how the heck can she be lauded as any kind of political theorist when she also has no personality.
That's the trick, isn't it? To have no personality so no one's offended and everyone thinks you're on their side. And then because you're one of the Tories, they fight so hard among themselves that they all stab each other. And at the end, you're like, oh, I'm still fine.
You really hear this stuff, right? We talk about people playing politics and people knowing that they're playing politics and putting up the Shireen. But with Liz Truss, she really believes this stuff. A lot of people say this stuff because they want to rally out support, but they don't actually really believe it. And they would maybe take some steps not to go ahead with it. She believes this stuff and she zombie just acts it out.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you, Tonya. There's two sorts of conservatives, in my view. There are the ones who earnestly believe that this stuff will make the country better. And of course, they are hideously wrong, overtly, provenly wrong. And then there are the ones who just have their own personal nasty agenda. And they say whatever will help them get away with it. But they would not be so foolish as to actually do wholesale the sort of things that are represented by the ideas behind this. The idea that we can slash taxes overnight and somehow have all this extra money and it will actually go into the economy when it won't go back into the economy. You cut taxes for rich people and more money accumulates in their offshore bank accounts and they don't need to go to Lidl this evening. I don't know why I'm sponsored by Lidl today. At least Rishi Sunak and his ilk are just in it to make their own fast buck. And yes, they're prepared to sell us some lies they know won't work to do that. And it's useful for them to have idiots like Liz Truss next to them pretending it will work, but she's not pretending.
I think that is utterly spot on. She does believe it will work. And can I just say, I'm an Aldi man.
Okay, sorry.
This popular conservatism is a drum which is being beaten by your Steve Bannons or various extreme right-wing Republicans within the US, but also by people like Nigel Farage, etc. And what I can't really understand, let's put the administrative state, the deep state, the establishment, let's put all that to one side. We've had 40 years of this neoliberalism of cutting taxes, saying that the government shouldn't spend on basic things like social care and infrastructure. And the economic position of Britain has massively deteriorated. We have not grown economically in real terms since 2007. And just about every economist will say that austerity, as put in by George Osborne in 2010, has been utterly counterproductive. That actually now we have potholes in the street. We have the NHS, which is creaking. We have utilities which are privatized, which are not fit for purpose. Well, one of the things that really surprised me is the amount of coverage that this popular conservatism is getting. But the economic model has failed. And it's not as if those people who voted for Brexit per se actually believe in this stuff. That was another issue to do with sovereignty, identity, taking back control, whether we agree with it or not. But there's no economic argument for this stuff after 40 years of selling off the family silver and giving more money to the rich. Tonya, my friend, please tell me that I'm missing a trick here.
No, you're not missing a trick. Since 2007, you said we haven't grown economically at all. Thinking, and we absolutely made that abysmal decision to put ourselves into further destruction. There is evidence that shows that we should be in a better place than we are when you look at the rest of Europe and you look at what else is happening in the rest of the world since the pandemic. But it's incomprehensible how we've managed to find ourselves here.
Let's talk about like first world countries. We're a little bit 1.1, 1.2. We're not as quite at the top of that sort of pecking order as we think we are, which is an incredible demonstration of waste, considering how much we've robbed from the rest of the world and we've now ruddy wasted. If you're going to steal 2/3 of everything from 3/4 of the world's poorest, it's embarrassing when at the end of that, you're broke, isn't it? That's pretty ridiculous. But yeah, that is what they've done. They've run us into the ground. I don't believe that they're really capitalists anymore in any traditional sense. I think they're just disaster capitalists. They just want to generate as much volatility as possible so that they can trade off it. And one way they do that is by encouraging this ridiculous sort of very politicized conservatism, the sort of Liz Truss, Nigel Farage, that leads us into doing really stupid things that they can trade off.
I'm on your boat here, Kate. Couldn't agree with you more. But Let's try and look at this in the round. And this is a question coming to you, Mike. Liz Truss did have a decade as a minister before coming prime minister. And according to her, in a book, she championed limited government and individual freedom in the face of a left-wing political agenda, and of which the left-wing has got so many of British institutions. I don't know, I thought since 2010, the Labour Party not actually been in power. And if you look at the Gordon Brown and Tony Blair's government, it was hardly the most left-wing. But anyway, that's what she's saying. So she reckons that she was ousted by the establishment for fighting for conservatism, because they, these big anti-conservative bodies, things like the Bank of England, hedge funds, exactly, was really what did for her. But one of the things which she says, I don't know if to say this is even particularly interesting, that the rise of authoritarianism and the adoption of fashionable ideas propagated by the global left only give us a decade to preserve the economic and cultural freedoms and institutions of the West that we all hold so dear. Are you feeling that also in the United States? There's only 10 more years to save everything from the socialists.
As a socialist, I'd say our plan is really more around the 12-year mark. So I appreciate her estimation. But again, it's a depressing trajectory of politics. As befitting America's role as the number one nation on earth, we are espousing our political methodologies and attributes. And it's good to see the UK picking those up in such a concerted effort. You are seeing some of the Americanization of British politics by traditionally what would have been American strategies, amongst them the releasing of a book. Over here, whenever anybody's going to run for any significant office, they have to release a book. Even if nobody buys it, you have to do it de rigueur. But I think to your points earlier about Liz Truss, I think it's the cult of narcissism. You know, when you talk about her being able to, or thinking that she can really reverse things, and then when she finds out that she can't, it's someone else's fault. I think we're looking into the same thing that powers Johnson and that powers Trump, and it's just this narcissistic personality. And we've reached a point where the voting base, if you go up to them and say, you know what, everything's going to be great, I'm going to make it great, they take you at face value, or at least a significant portion of them take you at face value. In terms of how that looks going forward, yeah, it's a good question. I'm not optimistic.
So one thing I will say, Mike, is you're right that in the US, people tend to write a book before they come into power. And then you get the opposite of it in the UK. They write a book afterwards and it's like a tell-all, which actually ends up just being like Larry the Downing Street cat had diarrhea on Wednesday and nobody cares. I think the write a book before we vote for you, I like that. I think that's a good idea. I'm like, write down your opinions on everything. Write down what you think you'd do. Write down where you think it's all going wrong. And even if I don't really believe that you're as sincere as you make out, very often when they write these books, you can read between the lines and go, you don't seem to care about this issue. This isn't in there. I think politicians should write a book and it should be available for free on the internet so we can all read it and see who the heck they are.
Just on the book itself, the writing style has actually been somewhat lauded, that people have actually said that the book is actually well edited. It has a crisp writing style.
They're all ghostwritten. None of these people write their own book.
And I was going to come on to that. However, what you're looking for in a book like this, surely some level of true introspection and some level of mea culpa, like I did make some mistakes. And you made a really interesting point, Mike and Kate. Obama did his books before he ran. He set his agenda. In Britain, generally, it's when somebody loses a ministership or gets booted out of office, then they'll write their tome. But she is no stateswoman, is she? There is no real gravitas in terms of political thought.
I think that she wants to be the stateswoman, and I think that she recklessly believes in her head that she is. And now, what you've all been waiting for, my deep and profound philosophy on life. But in fact, all we've done is pick it apart and go, oh, that's a weird thing she's written on page 4, and why she mentioned the Ocado delivery. But I think in her head, she's been the Prime Minister of Great Britain, and she pictures herself just stood next to Churchill, which we would find ridiculous. they can get some money for the book. She's going to get a ghostwriter in who luckily has a lovely, crisp writing style, and they'll make a few quid from it. And then it'll reappear in the cut price bargain bin outside Aldi or whatever supermarket we're sponsored by now. And yeah, she's playing that she is that statesperson when she's not, and nobody sees her that way.
I read an excerpt about her a couple years ago. I think this excerpt came from one of her teachers at school. And they said she would usually just dogmatically argue a point that is very off-center. And she would just dogmatically argue it. And she would try to make that point the fact to believe her or create a whole reality out of that point. And that's exactly what she's done here. Global politics and global economy, as we are today, is complex. No one's going to come up with easy answers, much less someone who hasn't shown the aptitude to understand the complexity of it. There's no way she can come up with the answer. She doesn't understand where we are today and how we got here. She hasn't shown any of that, not in her book, not in what she says, not in how she views the world. So how can she have the answers? So she has created a reality somewhere, somehow, and she's dogmatically pushing that reality. You can see it in how she also just expresses herself when she's being interviewed or when she comes up off stage. The lack of charisma is telling.
Just on that, there actually were a couple of concessions where she admitted that she was flesh and blood, so to speak. She said her handling while she was the Justice Secretary, she did it in a clumsy fashion due to being full frontal, whatever that slightly means. But just to slightly contradict all of our impressions of her as someone who's somewhat robotic and doesn't have the personal touch, she says, I'm gregarious and I like people. But even my best friends wouldn't describe me as a great people manager. Surely you need to be that to be prime minister. But anyway, she managed to get up that Tory greasy pole. Mike, why don't you have the last word?
Yeah, I hardly think that'll be the last word on Liz Truss. I think she's clearly leveraging herself into Farage 2.0, a sort of vague, semi-outsiderish position. Yeah, I think given the state of politics, I think her future is actually pretty bright. She has a willing audience that's going to believe that she was torpedoed, shot down, stabbed in the back. And I would be surprised if we don't see her as the leader of the Tories sometime in the next 10 years.
You what? You mean the Tory party is going to split then into two factions?
No, why?
Oh, wow. That's a conversation for another podcast.
I have to be contentious.
I'm sure you haven't got it confused with Penny Mordaunt. Penny Mordaunt will be in charge. That's what will happen. Put on it, Mike.
Oh, it'll be Liz Truss in a swimsuit. That's how she'll pull.
Will the party be as big as it is in 5-10 years' time? Will that party still be ready?
I'm not making that from.
So now is that time when we learn a little bit more about our panelists. And Z, before I say to you, what have you done in the last 7 days? I believe you have an announcement to make to the good listeners of the Mid-Atlantic podcast.
Yeah, we have a baby who just woke up 6 weeks postpartum today. So exciting times.
Tell me about motherhood, parenthood. What have you learned in the last 6 weeks other than you don't need sleep?
Oh, that. But you know what I've learned the most out of all the things? Because everything's a surprise the first time you have a kid, obviously. But I just think it is so amazing. Hats off to anybody here who has had a kid before Google existed, because I truly don't know how y'all did that. I would be in constant anxiety. Good for you guys. Did you just go to the library when you had questions? I don't know. I Google every 2 seconds.
That's what mothers / grandmothers, great aunts, etc. were for. Those were the repository of wisdom when it came to raising the next generation.
I didn't think about it like that. And you all had more support back then. But no, it's definitely, I'm thankful to have a kid in 2024 and not 1994.
And are you managing to, you know what? I was going to say, are you managing to get work done? You shouldn't be working at all, spending all the time with little Cohen Sanchez. How's dad dealing with things and how are the wider family dealing with the new addition?
It's exciting for them, I think, too. Everybody's still working because with this economy, the way it is, nobody's taking any time off with the new baby. But you adjust and you figure it out.
Now, very quickly, you need to tell us exactly where people can catch up with you on the socials. Go for it.
Yeah, so definitely follow us at Soul Strategies on all the social media platforms. We actually have some exciting stuff happening this week with our social media. So we're going to be doing a lot more things. And also feel free to follow my personal Instagram and my personal TikTok, which is the Colin Sanchez.
Mike Donahue, over to you, sir. What have you been doing in the last 7 days?
You'll be surprised to know that I am in training for the Olympics. I'm actually an Olympic hopeful. So yeah, that's been on my mind quite a bit. Cause I've realized that anybody can say that they're in training for the Olympics and that they're an Olympic hopeful. There's nobody checking that at all, but it sounds really good.
You want about the Paris Olympics of 2024 or you want about the next one?
You know, 2028. I think it's an outside chance for 2024. I think my odds are better for 2028. Wow. Yeah. And I'm still not sure exactly which event, probably something involved sitting, but we'll see. We'll have to wait. I do want to say, just to wrap up, I do want to bring people's attention to another Americanization politics that I heard from Rishi Sunak this week. And I'm going to paraphrase it. I don't know what he said exactly, but basically it was, we are not going to let Labour do to Britain what they did to Birmingham. And to me, that is dangerously on dog whistle territory right there. My ears definitely heard it. And I haven't really known British politicians to be super dog whistly. You probably have some other goofy name for whatever that thing is. But it's very concerning. And I think it needs to be nipped in the bud. You can find me at midatlanticcast.com.
There you go. Kate, our new person. What have you been up to in the last 7 days? Which bits of the earth have you been traversing? Please tell us.
I know I've basically been in London for the last 7 days. Yeah, I did.
Widen it out then. Let's say the last 21 days.
I was on tour in Australia. That's where I've been since the middle of January. And then I got out of there. And on the way back, I stopped in Jordan and spent some time with some friends of mine in the desert at Wadi Rum. So I was touring my solo show, which I'm still touring. It's called Fire Snake. Now that I'm back in the UK, it has four last chance to see before I retire the show. I do the last little four major cities. So it'll be in London, Manchester, York, and Leicester. That is the last four dates. And then it's zoom, that's a wrap. And then I will start writing a new show to open in Edinburgh at the Fringe in August. But people can follow me, like everything that I do. I have a website, katesmurthwaite.co.uk. If you go there, you'll find my video series, News at Kate, which people do sponsor. If people just want to see my weekly video about what's going on, sometimes funny, sometimes very much not funny, that's there. And there's a mailing list. Sign up to find out when I'm playing your town or be on my mailing list.
Very quickly, how was your first time on this August podcast?
I enjoyed it greatly. It's been good. Yeah, you haven't caught me out or done a sort of, there wasn't anything I was like, oh, they're going to do this. What?
Oh, yeah. You guys, Tonya Oldtrade, you have the honor, sir, of going last, propping up the rear. You're the rear guard action. Why don't you tell us what you've done in the last 7 days? Bring it home, my friend.
Nothing as far as Kate. I've just been trying to get help again. Doing a little bit of football, all of that good stuff.
Oh, short and sweet. You've been keeping your mind, body, and soul as one. Quickly, tell us where people can catch up with you on the socials, and then we'll wrap this up.
Audrey, the great on Twitter.
There you go. That's been your panel. We had Z, new mum, Cohen Sanchez. We had Kate, new girl, Smurthwaite. We had Mike, old boy Donahue, older than he's been on the podcast before. Not that he's physically old. And we had Tanya, I'm super fit, old trade, with us on your panel. And we discussed Donald Trump on trial and Liz Truss, what's the point? There you go. Take care. Don't forget, folks, Left of Centre Politics is Right Thinking Politics. We'll see you all again soon. Thank you to everybody who has been viewing the stuff on the Substack. It is new. It is a departure. Hopefully you've been enjoying those articles which I'm doing over there. And to the good couple of thousand people who download the podcast, please keep on doing that. And also give us some reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It's the best and easiest way for us to grow the family of Mid-Atlantic listeners. A lot of content coming your way next week. We're going to be looking at UK media again with Jane Moat, the ex-head of the BBC in London. We're going to be looking at the Shin Bet and Mossad the Israeli Secret Service and how they made the mistakes which led to October 7th. And we have a great Palestinian thinker, Mouin Rabbani, who's joining us actually on Monday. Now, if you have signed up to the Substack and to the mailing list, you'll actually get the Zoom link so you can sit in on that recording and you can basically then ask a question. He's utterly phenomenal. He has been all over the internet recently with his really quite thought-provoking views on Palestinian statehood. There is a reason to join the Substack if you haven't done already. Go to royfield.com, hit sign up for the newsletter, and then you'll get that link. You can be in the audience and ask a question. Take care. Look after yourselves. Bye-bye.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.